The reason we talk about this is that it's something that really helps us understand who we are in the context of our family of origin, and then figure out what we want to take and how we want to interact moving forward. Again, not just adhering to all these generational patterns, but being thoughtful about them. Does this make sense? Is this healthy? Does this work for me as an individual within my family system context?
Welcome to Love and Life. I'm Dr. Karen Anderson-Abril, here with my co-host,
Pastor Elliot Anderson.
And Love and Life is your place to hear conversations grounded in psych research, psychotherapy,
and biblical truth
to help us thrive in love and life. Hello and happy Friday. This week, I had the opportunity to speak for a class at Judson University, where Elliot is a professor, and I may be teaching in the fall some courses here and there. So I was asked to come and present some material. So of course I went to one of Elliot and my favorite topics, family systems theory and therapy. And I shared just, I only had like 20 minutes. So I shared just two principles that we can understand and implement today to help us level up in our family relationships, which helps us independently with our intrapersonal relationship with ourselves. And of course, as we always talk about on Love and Life, taking these action items will also help us in our journey to love, or if we're already partnered up, it will help us elevate our connection for deeper, more meaningful intimacy. So we wanted to share this talk with you, the Love and Life community. My recent lecture on family systems theory and therapy, right after this. We want to take a moment to say a quick thank you to our community for supporting our sponsor, The Wellness Company. We've been so thrilled to partner with their team of esteemed medical professionals, including Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Harvey Risch, Dr. Drew Pinsky, and other truth-seeking doctors we can trust. Many of us are feeling some post-pandemic uncertainty, which makes perfect sense because now they're talking about this disease X that's supposedly about to break out at any time. But we can take charge of our health and prepare ourselves for natural disasters or man-made threats with the Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit. It's the ultimate safeguard for your family. The kit includes vital medications like ivermectin, amoxicillin, and Z-Pak, with a comprehensive guidebook researched and written by the company's chief medical board. Visit twc.health/lovelife and use promo code LOVELIFE for an exclusive 15% discount. That's twc.health/lovelife and promo code LOVELIFE, all one word, for 15% off your order. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. And we're going to talk about family systems theory and therapy. And what I love about psychology is that the things that we learn in class that day, we can take home to our dorms, to our families, and we can begin to utilize those concepts and to really grow both personally and professionally. And that's what I hope to leave you with today. So, first, to get you guys a little bit interactive in this presentation, I want you to take out a piece of paper and write down the members of your family of origin, so the people who grew up in your home with you, and then any extended family members who you had frequent contact with. And that we will use that throughout the presentation. So just the family members who grew up in your household with you, and then any extended family members, maybe grandparents, aunts and uncles, with whom you had frequent contact. Okay, so now that you have those guys down, those folks down, we'll be using that as a touchstone for the rest of the content of today's presentation. Oops, I went back. There we go. So family systems theory, there are several fathers of the family systems orientation, and one is Murray Bowen, and actually I studied him for my dissertation when I got my doctorate in developmental psychology after being at Judson and then at Wheaton College for my master's in clinical psychology. So I was a therapist for several years, did a lot of work in the inner city with kids and child welfare, came back and got my doctorate and then became a professor. But getting back to Bowen, he's one of the fathers of family systems theory, and he's one of the first to talk about what he called the transgenerational model. And it's the notion that individuals are going to repeat those patterns, dynamics, that have been handed down from the family to family through generations. So your current family functioning, when you look at your family of origin that you put down,
on your piece of paper and you think about some of the dynamics or the ways that people behaved, the patterns that were established, the ways that people dealt with emotions and conflict, all of that was, according to Bowen, passed on from their parents. So your grandparents passed it on to your parents. They passed those patterns on to you, probably without even being aware of it. It's just the way that this transgenerational dynamics occur. So a lot of what we take, and you guys have probably started to see that in college, it's a really nice opportunity to see how other families deal with their dynamics, deal with conflict, deal with expectations. And so when you're at college, you might think that everyone is gonna text their mom 10 times a day because that's the connectedness that you have with your family. That is the pattern that was passed down in your transgenerational family. But maybe other people don't have that same kind of expectation for connectedness and communication. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But it's just the understanding that these will pass down. They often are manifestations of unresolved issues that haven't ever been taken care of. Now, sometimes we see generational patterns that can be quite toxic. We have patterns of abuse sometimes, where grandparents abused their children, and then when they became children, parents, they abused their children. Or addiction can also be a generational pattern that gets passed down. And so one of the things we want to do is certainly as young adults trying to become as emotionally healthy as we can be, especially those of you going into the helping profession, we want to be working on these, addressing these issues. Don't leave them unresolved. As one of my professors at Wheaton said to us when I was getting that master's in clinical psych to learn how to be a therapist, she said, we can only take our clients as far along on their emotional journey as we've been willing to go on our emotional journey. So if I have unresolved issues from my family of origin that I'm unwilling to address or look at, let's say I have mommy issues where I have a lot of angst and problems with my mother, and then a client comes to me to talk about some angst and problems with her mother, how equipped am I to help her when I've been unwilling to address those issues? So this is what Murray's bringing up, that it's no fault of our own, and what you went through in your household as a child, you couldn't control. It wasn't your fault that perhaps there were some toxic generational issues that were passed on, patterns, behaviors, dysfunction. It's not your fault. You were a child. You had no control. But yeah, I've heard it put this way. What happened to you in childhood wasn't your fault. What you do moving forward in adulthood, that is your responsibility. We have to take charge of that, take ownership of that. And so again, they're going to persist unless they're examined and addressed, and that's the type of work that you're doing here at Judson, and we'll do more of, I hope, for those of you who intend to go to grad school. So I want to bring a little Bible in here, because when I was thinking about this, it reminded me of a verse that used to trouble me. I mean, it's still not like my favorite verse, but as a younger person, I thought, wow, the sins of the father are passed on to the generation and after generation. And that all seemed rather unfair to me. like if your dad's not a good guy, why do you have to, in a sense, pay for those sins? But I wonder, and I'm not the Bible scholar, I didn't go to divinity school or anything like that, but I wonder if this is more God's just recognition and stating these transgenerational patterns, that people sin and there are consequences that can be lasting. I don't know, it just always struck me as like, that's not fair. And yet we do know that a lot of what we experience in our families isn't fair. So yeah, I just wanted to bring that in just as an idea. The other piece that's really related to this that I think is something that's really relevant and we see a lot of around us, and maybe we've experienced ourselves, is the idea that a recapitulation of family of origin issues. This is something that Bowen talks about, also Irvin Yalom, who's like the father of group psychotherapy, he talks about this as well, because oftentimes in a group context, some of those family of origin dynamics start to play out in groups. But he talks about recapitulation. So what happened in our childhood, we may in adulthood try to, in a sense, correct or fix what happened in our childhood in our current adult life. Let me give you like a Psych 101 example. Would be, let's say we've got 25-year-old Sarah, she's on the dating scene. She just keeps connecting with emotionally unavailable men. And that's to her chagrin, because she would like to meet her person, she would like to start a marriage and a family, but she finds herself over and over again connecting with guys who just breadcrumb her, give her just enough to keep her hanging around, but never fully committing to her. And then she goes to see a counselor and finds that there's a connection to her family of origin issues in the sense that her father maybe left the home when she was five and was never around, never sent her a card every once in a while, a check here and there for Christmas. But she didn't have that connection. So now in adulthood, the theory goes she's trying to get that emotionally unavailable man in adulthood that will help somehow help her feel as if her childhood neglect is healed and fixed. So these are the kind of things that we can see. And as you guys continue in your coursework, I'm sure you start to do what we all do as young psychologists in the making. We tend to start analyzing ourselves. We tend to start analyzing our friends. People probably come to you and ask for that kind of advice too. So, but as I was talking about earlier, what my professor from Wheaton reminded us, that really that self-reflection, that introspection that we do now in your career development will pay off in spades in your ability to really help those that you are seeking to help as you move forward in your profession.
We'd love to connect with you further via our weekly newsletter. Joining the Love and Life family gets you first access to bonus content and flash sale pricing for books and consultations.
And when you sign up, you'll receive Karen's Empowered Dating Playbook or my Empowered Marriage Playbook. Head over to loveandlifemedia.com to join the Love and Life family.
So I want to now look at two main kind of pillars of Bowenian theory that will be very helpful. They are things that we can talk about today, and I'll give you a couple takeaway action items to really start you on your journey to trying to level up your emotional well-being. Individuation is the perfect topic for you guys because you are all in that space. In fact, my dissertation was on individuation from family of origin and identity development in college students. And it was easy because I had a pool of subjects in my students out at Northern when I was teaching out there that I could use and ask them to fill out surveys about their relationships with their mothers and fathers. But it was also the area of interest. I was really interested in college students and what happens during the college years as you start to, as Bowen talks about, differentiation, or the term that I use is individuation. And it's basically the level of togetherness versus separateness that you have with your family of origin, and then specifically each parent specifically that you have. And that could be different. If your folks were together, you had an intact home, it might be similar, your level of connectedness and separateness to your mother and your father. But if you had a divorce home, you may be quite close, more close or separate from one or the other parents. But the reason we talk about this is that it's something that really helps us understand who we are in the context of our family of origin, and then figure out what we want to take and how we want to interact moving forward. Again, not just adhering to all these generational patterns, but being thoughtful about them. Does this make sense? Is this healthy? Does this work for me as an individual within my family system context? So on the extremes, you have families where individuals are so highly connected that they are what we call enmeshed or fused. And this would be, like we talked about earlier, this might be the person who's texting 100 times a day to all the family members, and that's the expectation. So if mom sends them a text, a good morning text, and they don't text back by 8:05 when mom texted at 8, then there's going to be problems within the family. That would be a very fused. This would be someone who's probably maybe even coming here to live on campus, but going home every single chance they get. And so that level of closeness, according to Bowen, would be such that it might be getting into the mesh level, which is going to be hard for that individual, young adult, to extricate himself or herself to figure out who they are, who God created them to be. Because God didn't mean for you to be a mini of either of your parents, a carbon copy, a miniature version of one of your parents. That's not who God intended you to be. Through God's grace, we hope that you can take some wonderful qualities that he gave your parents, and you can also have some of those as part of your character. But we're not meant to be the same. When we're enmeshed with our parents, we can get into that situation where we are having a hard time figuring out who we are because the expectation for closeness is almost suffocating. Autonomous is the polar opposite of the enmeshed, and where we're so autonomous that we are in fact cut off. And that is, an emotional cutoff can happen in families. According to family systems theory, it's not ideal actually, unless you come from a severely dysfunctional, horrifically toxic, abusive family. You may need to cut off for your own health and well-being. But in general, we don't recommend that because it doesn't permit you to move from being a child within your family to an adult within your family, and then move from the parent-child relationship to the parent-adult-child relationship, and begin to even at some point in your adult life, have a friendship with your parents that's now moving from that childhood where your parent is a boss and this is what you're supposed to do to that more friendship and peer relationship. And so if we cut off, the theory suggests that if we do so, just again, not because something's horrifically toxic, but because we just, I'm out of here, I'm gone, enough of this family, we can be emotionally stagnant at the space where we cut off. So if I took off at 18, never to connect with my parents again, I can be emotionally stuck in some ways at that same age when I took off. And I was unwilling to do what's sometimes hard work, to move through adolescence into adulthood to find that adult-adult relationship with our parents. So we want to look at this, and it's important for you guys because you're right at that age where it's time to start doing that. And that can be harder and it can be easier depending on your parents and the expectations again. Do you have a family that expects a lot of contact and your mother's going to feel abandoned if you don't text her 10 times a day? Or do you have a family where there's so much autonomy that it's kind of hard to find your way as a young adult because there's really no you're not tethered to anything anymore? And I wonder, and this is hard to say, but this could be a generational difference based on technology. Because when I came to Judson, there was one phone at the end of the hall, and it was very expensive to call long distance. And so we had these calling cards. This is so not your world. We had calling cards, and there would be some minutes on there that your parents had purchased, and you would call probably once a week for 10, 15 minutes, and that was it. There was no texting throughout the day. There was no FaceTime. We still got letters in the CPO. I sent Liv a letter like a year ago. I don't think you got it for 6 months because you never checked your mailbox. We would run to our mailbox because that was the way that we connected with anyone who wasn't at campus. So I'm wondering if individuation, getting that separateness piece now, because we want to have the theory is that healthy levels of separateness and connectedness, sounds like it's an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, but we're saying no, we can have high levels of connectedness while also having high levels of independence and separateness. It might be harder when you've got the connection in your phone at all times. Do you find that even maybe coming to Judson, it was harder to settle in here with a new community because it was so easy to connect with friends from home or family or high school friends? Like, I don't know. It's again, it's hard to say because we would to do a proper experimental design. In research methods class, Dr. Curry would tell us that we would have to have one group that would experience having no phones going to college and another group that had the phones, and then we would compare some of the individuation processes for both groups. But we're not doing that because everyone's got phones. But yeah, just something to think about when we think about the generational differences. But factors that influence individuation, we have emotional reactivity, the ability to take an I position, and seeing parents as people. And again, Bowen is submitting that the more that we work on this individuation, the healthier we will be able to be with our families. We'll be able to have that close and yet independent relationship with them. And again, an added bonus for you as young professionals, it's going to help you be more effective with your clients. But so emotional reactivity, we're going to talk a little bit about triangulation here in a minute. But how susceptible are you to getting caught up in family concerns? Does your mom call you and be like, your sister, right? Or does your mom call you and go, does your dad call you and go, your brother, or you're da, da, da. Are you expected to be in all the drama? Or are you permitted to say, it's not my business? Or is that seen as a betrayal? Like, oh, are you part of this family? Do you love this family? Again, those expectations are different from family to family, but it's something that we need to look at and recognize. And I'll give you an example of triangulation here in a minute. Ability to take an I position. Do you speak and behave and think for yourself? Again, some families, you are permitted to do so. In some families, it's like, oh no, you are a Smith, and the Smiths, we vote this way, we think this way, we go to this church, we have these beliefs. Are you able to say, well, I agree with a lot of that, but I don't agree with all of it? Is that permissible in your family? That's going to be harder for you to individuate if that's considered betraying your family, being a black sheep of the family if you go against some of the family norms and expectations. The ability to take an I position, you'll see it with parents too. You hear where parents will talk, and when they're little, when kids are little, that's one thing, but you know, you'll hear someone say the kid is looking, oh, we're going to look at Trinity Christian, Judson, and Wheaton, and we're looking, the parents saying, we're looking at applying at those schools. Are you, Mom? You gonna apply? So just that tendency to see the family as a collective, it's going to be harder for young people in these kinds of environments to extricate themselves and find that identity through their individuation. And then seeing parents as people. You know, when you're really little, your mom's your mom, and that's really her only job in life, right? Kind of like when you see your teacher at the grocery store when you're little, you're like, excuse me, what's happening? My teacher exists outside of my school. It's similar with your parents. When you're little, and that's, you're egocentric, and that makes perfect sense, you're going to see your parents as mom, dad, and that's their most important role and the only role. As you get older and you start to individuate, you start to say, well, wow, my mom, she was once 18 too. She had hopes and dreams. Wow, I just went through my first horrible breakup. I bet my mom had a horrible breakup. You start to see your parents as something other than just that role of mom and dad, and that helps you and the entire family mature. You can maybe take your parents off a pedestal if you put them on the pedestal, depending again on your family configuration. My family was pretty traditional. My parents were really, I was so blessed. They're so wise. They were really helpful, great parents. It was easy for me to kind of put them on a pedestal. One of the guys I dated, Judson, he was, his mom was single. He was one of three boys, and they were all had different dads. So no intact family, very different. He, as the oldest son, had to kind of step up and help raise his younger brothers. And so he taking his mom down a notch off the pedestal because he had to rise up and be almost like pseudo dad in the family. So it wasn't the same process for him to go, oh wait, mom's not perfect. That was a bit of a process for me because I was blessed to have that the strong parental figures. But when we do this type of work, we are starting to get that separateness that's really necessary and really, like I said, really helpful for our personal and professional growth and development. If you don't do it, you may be the type of young person who then you start dating, but your allegiance is still to your family of origin. And you know, the Bible tells us to leave and cleave. And some of you may have dated a mama's boy, and that's no fun. Or some of you may have dated a daddy's girl, and you could never be as good as her father. You could never be, everything you did was not as good, or everything that your girlfriend does if you're a mama's boy can't compare to mom. And that can really keep, again, infantilize a young person. They're not going to be freed up to have that emotional bandwidth to be able to pursue romantic relationships. And most of us want to find our person. So we want to do this family of origin work so that we are freed up to be ready and available emotionally for that connection.
If you're interested in processing further as you align your mind, body, and spirit, we're here for you.
Head over to loveandlifemedia.com and click on the Work With Us tab. There you can book individual or couples sessions.
We'd love to work with you. Sign up at loveandlifemedia.com.
So triangles are another way that we can get caught up in our family of origin drama, so to speak. Triangles are a very stable but unhealthy way of relating. That's why I had you guys write down the people in your family. And I'm gonna give you an example that may help kind of concretize this in a moment. Triangles divert communication. It's a very easy thing to do. They feel very validated. I feel very validated when I do it. An example, it's not just within your family. Example would be when I lived at Volkman, there were four of us, and my roommate Dina used to drive me crazy because she would have an 8 o'clock class, but she would set her alarm for 6:30, and then press snooze for an hour and a half. Me, I have an 8 o'clock class. I'm getting up at 7:45. I'm ready. 5 minute shower and lower Volkman. I'm there. I'm ready. So what does Dina do? Hit snooze. My alarm clock goes up at 7:45. She hops in the shower before me. True story. Really annoying. Now I'm going to be late for class, but I was the one who was doing the right thing and not waking everyone up every 5 minutes like she was. But do I talk to Dina about this? No, of course not. Talk to Miriam. And I have all this griping with Miriam, and she's like, that is so wrong. How dare she do that? Of course, Miriam sleeps like a log, so she had no problem with it. But she was going to validate her girl, and yeah, Dina's wrong for that. I feel better because, yeah, it's right. Dina's wrong for that, and I'm in the right, and Miriam agrees, yeah. Has anything been resolved? Right? Am I getting closer to my other roommate who I could potentially use this conflict as an opportunity to get closer, to use some mature communication skills and say, hey, can we work out a system in the morning that doesn't involve you swooping into the shower right at the time that I'm supposed to be in the shower? No. But it felt good and allowed me to avoid any conflict I didn't feel like messing with. These happen in families all the time. And I'm going to give you a real nice concrete example. They keep us from being from growth and maturity. They feel good. They feel validating, but they don't help us grow. All right, here's a great example that I think will really flesh this out for you. We've got Beth. She's a wife. Joe is her husband. They are the parents of Jamie. And this is a very typical common family triangle, but I want you guys to consider your family of origin, the members therein, and try to see if there's any triangles that you might need to identify and start processing and working through. In this scenario, hypothetically speaking, Beth and Joe, Janie's like 28, she's got a couple brothers, and some sisters, they're all young adults now. No one's living at home. Beth and Joe are having some problems. Beth's feeling threatened because Joe's not coming home after work. He's like, I'm going out with the boys. He's got a lot of work dinners. And Beth's feeling a little freaked out because she's like, is he having an affair? What's actually happening? So she calls Janie, her daughter, and says, I don't know what's going on with your father. We're having these issues. I don't feel close to him anymore. I'm a little worried because he's not keeping a normal schedule. I mean, I'm not even going to say this, but maybe, I don't know, he could be having an affair with some secretary at work. And Beth's like, you know, I mean, Janie is not, she's not 14. That's okay. She's 28. She's in her master's program for psychology. So she's a therapist in the making, and that'll be great because she can use me as a client in practice. Yeah, it feels so good for her to have Janie go, wow, Mom, that's rough. I really hope that's not the case. I really love you guys, and I want you guys to work through it. I don't know, what can I do? Maybe I should sit down and talk to Dad. I mean, I am in my training to be a psychologist, so maybe I could help. Let's talk about all the ways that this is highly dysfunctional and highly counterproductive to the entire family's growth and development and the individual's growth and development. Just throw out some ideas why you don't like this. Yeah.
Putting a burden on the child and expecting them to solve the problem.
Absolutely. What can Janie, I don't care how many degrees she has, what can she actually do about her parents' marriage? Like, really? Pray. Not that that's not nothing, but I mean, actually, what is her responsibility or obligation as a good, a loving daughter? Is there anything that she could do? Yeah, go ahead.
Love both her parents.
Yeah. And wouldn't it, we could make the argument that Beth telling Janie all this stuff is making it harder for Janie to love her dad. Because she sees him differently now. And you're absolutely right. Her job as an adult daughter is to have that individuation, that nice high level of connectedness and independence, but that nice individual relationship with each of her parents, individually. And that's making it hard. Beth's not trying to do this. She's not like, ha ha ha, I'm going to mess with my daughter's head. That's not what's happening here. But that's making it hard for Janie to have that adult daughter-father relationship. And that's not loving on Beth's part. What else could be going on? Or what else could happen? Like another ramification that could be negative about this. Yeah?
Beth could have misunderstood the whole situation. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Something happened at work, maybe a new promotion happened, and Joe just didn't communicate with us all this in the first place.
Absolutely. It could be all smoke and mirrors. It could be nothing. Beth could be totally paranoid because she just watched some, like, Lifetime TV show about someone who had another life, right, and three wives or something. So she has missed the opportunity to develop her relationship with her husband by having that open, honest communication you're talking about. So their relationship, by her going to her daughter, it's weakening the marital bond. And that's not healthy either. Especially now that they're in this new season where they're empty nest and it's time for them to have the second act of their marriage and reconnect and have some fun again now that they're not raising kids. The other issue that troubles me is that Janie is out there on the dating scene. She's trying to meet her person. She's trying to connect with men. And if she now starts to think, oh my gosh, this father of mine, who I thought was this great husband, is really not, might that impact her ability to have an honest and healthy pursuit of romance in her life? She might start thinking, oh my gosh, all men are dogs. Like, they all cheat. Even my dad, who I thought was a stand-up guy, cheat. And that's gonna impact her as she's trying to move through her next stage of life and find her relationship goals and dreams. So it's really quite a mess. And it's very stable though, because Beth feels validated. Yeah, Janie said so. Janie said it was a problem. And yet we have, the family is stagnant. The triangle allows the family to persist in dysfunction and lack of health. Gail.
So what is the difference between, like, when you're in a situation with someone and you want to process it with someone else so you can go back and, is it just, like, the difference between this, which is stagnant, or wanting to process something before you talk to someone, is the difference that you do end up going and talk to them and make sure that line is still there?
Yes.
Or is there, how do you keep that healthy in a sense of avoiding?
That's such a great question, because we do need to process. We need to bounce things off people. We have to be very specific and particular in who we pick for that. So who do I think Beth should talk to? Frankly, one of her girlfriends. Now, she may not want to do that because she doesn't want to paint her husband in a bad light. And that's something to think about, too, because then her girlfriends might be like, well, we never liked your husband in the first place, right? It could get a little dicey. If she needs to be careful about who she's processing this with, then she might want to think about a therapist. Or just be like, hey, honey, hey, Joe, I don't know what's going on. I don't feel comfortable enough to even talk about it. Let's go see a therapist, a couples counselor. Yeah.
But isn't she unintentionally going to paint Joe in a bad light no matter who she talks to about it?
Yeah.
Especially if they've known her husband, even back when they're dating. So either way, whether she goes to Janie, like no matter what, if they've known the family, then anything she says is going to paint them in a bad light. So she might as well go see a licensed person or someone outside of the daughter, because that's going to be the end game. Some negative things are going to be said and perception is going to be changed.
Excellent point. I mean, again, I think my highest recommendation is what you guys are saying. You see a licensed professional, a pastor, someone who you have that trust and who can be outside and objective. Because for her to sit there, and paint it that my husband, apparently he's been a cheat, goodness knows, and there was that time 10 years ago, he came home late, 5 minutes late, I guess he was cheating then too. I mean, you can get really out of control with this kind of stuff. But yeah, to your point, that's very important. But we do need to process. So we have to be very mindful. We have to keep those boundaries. You know, that's a term we talk a lot about in psychology. We have to keep those boundaries intact and be very thoughtful. And as we wrap this up, I want to share one other element that I think is really helpful for you guys, because I don't know if you're looking at your piece of paper and you're thinking there's some triangles therein. But Janie, as we talked about, her job is to have that relationship with her mother and her relationship with her father and have that be as healthy as possible. Her parents' marriage, and that's why I call it wife and husband and not mom and dad. They occupy the same roles, but they're distinct roles and necessarily distinct. Her parents' marriage is not only nothing that she can do anything about, not her problem. We would argue from a family systems perspective, it's not her business. It's really not her business. She can love her parents by being a great adult daughter to each of them. But to meddle in or be drawn into triangulation, whether she asked for it or not, it's not her business. If she senses something's going on, she can pray about it. She can go to a support group for adult kids with parents who are trying to triangulate them. I mean, there's a lot that she can do, but it's going to be hard, won't it? How is she going to stop her mom from making that call? Do you guys have any ideas of how you would, if your mom calls to gripe about your dad? What are some ways we can gently place that boundary? That's not easy, is it? Especially if you're in a family where it's like, but you're my daughter. I'm closest to you. I can't talk to some stranger. You want me to go talk to a therapist? They don't know me the way you do. I mean, it gets very heightened emotions in families. I would just recommend saying, Mom, I love you, but this is not an issue that I can be supportive. I can't be supportive for you in this, not because I don't want to, but because it's just not my role. It's not healthy for me. It's not healthy for my growth and development and my relationship with my father. But that's not easy. You might have to practice that. Role play. When you're processing, role play that with friends. Okay, the takeaways. And again, just looking back at your piece of paper, some things to think about, things you can do today to help you level up with your family, with your personal development, and your professional development. take those steps to individuate. Like I said, it's the process of being in contact, but not enmeshed, and also emotionally separate, but not totally cut off. That is, according to family systems, the optimal way to relate to your family as a young person and moving and beyond. Detriangulate. You've had some good examples of that recently in the last example. Person-to-person relationships. Two family members relate personally to each other about each other. That's hard sometimes because your mom's calling you and wants to talk about your sister. And again, her relationship with your sister is not your business, not your problem. So you may have to put that boundary there too. Mom, I think that what you want to talk about is about Jennifer, and that's really between you and Jennifer. And I love you both, so I want you guys to have a great relationship. I don't think there's anything I can do. And then just pivot. Did you see that movie? Sound of Freedom? It was so good, but also so scary. And some families will say, if we don't talk about each other, essentially, if we don't triangulate, we have nothing to talk about. Well, that's an opportunity for you to break some of those transgenerational patterns of a lack of health and just say, I gotta be the one to say, I love everyone in this family, and I'm not gonna get caught up in the drama, because that doesn't help anything. And in fact, it actively hinders true individuation and true connectedness and intimacy in the family. Seek to understand those intergenerational patterns so that you can be the one to break the chain. And a genogram can be very helpful with that. If you guys have done one here, you maybe have. But for sure, those of you who move on to grad school, whether in clinical psych, counseling psych, or social work, you will encounter a genogram, and some of those patterns might come up, and they might come to play. So I hope that this has been an opportunity for you to see some of those real-world applications for the stuff that we talk about in your courses, in today's lecture, and then in your other courses. Thank you so much for your time and attention and for interacting with me. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, as always, for listening and for being a part of the Love and Life family. It means so much to us. Please let us know if there's any content that you would like us to address. We're covering a lot of issues, a wide range, because we're holistic over here at Love and Life. We cover mind, body, and spirit, and the integration of all three for thriving in love and life. Until next time, make it a great week.
Love and Life is produced by Tim May and hosts and executive producer, Dr. Karen Anderson-Abril.